As Steve said, this is really just going to kind of be a three-week series, and we're on week four, and I think there's going to be a week five and a week six. And as we just keep reading the Gospels this summer, is kind of what we're doing, and there's just more meals, more supper times with Jesus. And here in a couple weeks, I think I'm just going to quit saying it's a 3 week or 4 week or 5 week series. We're going to start a series about the miracles of Jesus, before we kind of, you know, get into the fall, and then after Labor Day, the plan is to do a series on the book of James. And so that's kind of where we're heading, and then we have Advent. So we're kind of mapped out, but just when I kind of put it in ink, God kind of comes and changes it. But we've been saying since the beginning of the series that in this first century culture, to invite someone into your home for a meal was to invite someone into the heartbeat and rhythm of your life and the heartbeat and rhythm of your family, and that it wasn't just, you know, a come in and put on a fake facade, but you were going to let them come in and see how, you know, you disciplined your children and let them see how everybody helps, you know, clear the table and set the table and all that kind of stuff. And to accept a dinner invitation in this first century culture was to be a willing participant in their in the life and family of the individual. And these meals, they were an event. It wasn't a dine and dash. It wasn't, you know, hey, we'll do dinner from 6 to 6:30. It was you come very early in the evening, and you would leave very late at night, well after dark, because these were gatherings. They were where people would come and just not rush things and be there for a while and enjoy one another's company and how's it really going and how's the family and how's work and let's talk about God and what God is doing in your life and here's what God is doing in my life. It was one of those nights where you just did not want it to end. That's how the meals were. And so these meals, as we read about them in the Gospels, are really important. Because they tell us a lot about who Jesus was, but they also tell us a lot about what he was about. And that anytime Jesus had a choice between the religious insider and the person who didn't think they had a snowball's chance with the God of the universe, Jesus would pick the outsider every single time. And so today we're going to look at another meal that Jesus had, and this meal is every waiter and waitress's worst nightmare. Okay, anybody ever wait tables before? Maybe back in college. Okay, I mean, it's a great job, it's a great gig, until you get a large party, right? I mean, you don't mind doing a two top, a four top, do an eight top, pretty good at that. But when Jesus rocks up to the restaurant and the hostess asks, "Well, how many in your party?" Jesus says, 5,000, all right? So, it was a large group. So we're not talking a tin top. We're talking a pretty large top here, pretty large group. I'm not a big fan of going to lunch or dinner with big groups. And when I say big group, I'm talking 25 or 30 plus, okay? I'm just not a big fan of it. I don't know who is. Does anybody love to go out to eat with large groups? Okay, yeah, you're a couple of you. Okay, that's because you're not picking up the check. But I don't really like it for several reasons. One of them is no matter how great the restaurant is, when you're at a large group, and I'm not talking 8 or 10, I'm talking 25 plus, okay? When you walk in, you're not getting good service. I don't care how great the restaurant is or how on top of their game the waiter or waitress is. You're just not getting good service when you sit at 25, you know, or 30 people to a table. In fact, you know, if I have anything to do with that, I'm like, you know what? We don't all have to sit together. In fact, I prefer not to sit with him and her. You know, just put us 4 to a table or 5 to a table. And then somebody's like, no, put us all together. Well, that'll be a 2-hour wait. Oh, that's great. You know, I'm like, no, I don't want to wait. So you're not going to wait a long time, and you're not going to get great service. And then on top of that, forget about your food being served hot, okay? It's going to be cold. You know, even though I say, hey, just bring it out when it's ready. Oh, no, we'll just bring it all out together. I don't know, don't do that. Just bring it when it's ready. But it's going to be cold. And forget about it being right, okay? Because when they're trying to take care of a 30 top and you ask them to hold the black olives, they're going to translate that as extra black olives. And so, you know, just don't say anything, you know, when your order comes out wrong in a you know, big party, because when you send it back, it's not coming back. You know what I mean? I mean, you don't want to eat it when it comes back. I mean, because I've worked at a restaurant. I've waited tables. I see what happens to food when you send it back. It's just not good. It's not a good thing. So forget about it being right. And then if you don't get there early enough when you're sitting at a large party, guess where you're sitting? You're sitting down with the kids. Yeah, that's right. Hope you enjoy coloring, okay? Because that's what you're going to get. You're not going to get adult conversation. You're going to get breaking up fights. And chances are you're sitting next to somebody's, you know, two-year-old, and they're going to say, oh, hey, you know, little Susie hasn't eaten. Here's her beets and carrots and broccoli all mixed up together. Why don't you go ahead and try to feed her that and be careful. She spits. And that's just going to happen. And then... And it never fails. I mean, you know, you show up to a large party and your family couldn't come. And so you drew the short stick and you got to go because it's somebody's birthday. And so it's just you. And then the waiter comes and says, well, how would you like to split that check up? And somebody always says in the party, oh, just divide it up evenly, you know, to where you end up paying for everybody else's food, because the person who usually says divide it up between the five of us, they're the ones who ate the most and drank the most when it's just you by yourself. And so just going, anybody want to go to lunch, by the way, you know? We'll just all go in, you know, hey, GCC, party of 250, you know, we'll just do that. But I'm not a big fan, but today's story is Jesus' party of 5,000. And it's Jesus feeding of the 5,000, and it's really more than 5,000. They just counted the men. There's also women and children. And so it could have been, you know, up to 15, 20,000 people that Jesus is feeding here. But the story, it addresses the tension that every one of us have felt at some point in our lives when we feel like God is asking us to step out of our comfort zone. You know what I'm talking about? It's that tension of... man, should I say something? Should I not? You know, should I go over there? Should I not? That tension. And so as we talk, as we go through this story, I'd like for everybody to think about a time that you felt like God was kind of nudging you a little bit, kind of step out of your comfort zone. And I want you to think about that tension and that emotion and that insecurity and that anxiety and that fear that went along with that. Because every one of us have experienced that, to where, you know, we kind of start going through, you know, I don't know enough, and I'm not equipped enough, and I haven't really been going to church that long, and I don't know enough about the Bible, and who am I to say something, or who am I to do something? We've all felt that tension. Well, today's story, it addresses that tension, but more importantly, it addresses what happens to our faith when we step out of our comfort zone and we trust God with the results. So if you have your Bibles this morning, turn to Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, if you didn't bring your Bibles, we're going to throw it up on the screen for you. Or you can bring it up on your phone. But Matthew chapter 14 is the story of Jesus' party of 5,000 and the feeding of really probably 15,000 people at one time. And let me just say this up front, because I may forget to say it later. Jesus did not need any help feeding this crowd, okay? Let me just say that, put that out there. He did not need any help, okay? He could have done it all by himself, but he invited the disciples to participate in his plan, just like he invites us in to participate in his plan to take care of and to serve and to love other people. Does not need us, but invites us into that plan. And that's what we see here, because when we get the invite, sometimes there's tension. So Matthew chapter 14, verse 13 says, now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate or isolated place by himself. So what Matthew is talking about is Jesus has just gotten word that his cousin, John the Baptist, has been killed, has been beheaded, okay? And so Jesus, he wants to get by himself. Just like most of us, when we get bad news, we want to kind of collect our thoughts and process what we just heard. Jesus is wanting to get by himself. He's wanting to grieve. He's wanting to mourn. He's wanting to process, kind of get his thoughts together, because he's sad here. And he just heard about John the Baptist. And so he gets in this boat and to go across the lake, and this is what happens. But when the crowds heard it, or that Jesus, you know, was close by, because Jesus is getting really popular now, because you know Jesus is going around healing people and he teaches like, you know, the scriptures like they've never heard it taught before. So when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. So this is what's going on, okay? It's not a huge lake. Jesus is in a boat. He's going across the boat. And you got a mob of people, a crowd of people who are walking on the lake shore trying to follow Jesus, you know? So they're all walking and they kind of stop and they wait. Is this where he's going to come ashore? He's got to come ashore sometime. Oh, no, he's on the move again. Let's go, let's keep. And so you got this mob walking around the lake, okay? And they stop and they wait. Oh, no, let's go, let's keep going. Okay, and they walk a little bit. We got to go back. And this is what's happening. And they're following Jesus around the lake. And then Jesus, when he went to shore, he saw a great crowd, so people have been gathering, and he had compassion on them. The number one emotion that Jesus feels for us is compassion. He had compassion on them and he healed their sick. So Jesus, he comes to shore, he gets out of the boat, he looks up, mob of people there, and he goes right in to ministry mode. Okay, verse 15. It says, now when it was evening, so they've been there a while, okay? Now it was evening and the disciples came to him and said, so Jesus, he's been teaching, he's been preaching, he's been healing the sick. Evening's come, and the disciples come up, and they said, hey, Jesus, this is a desolate place. We're out in the middle of nowhere here, and the day is now over. Send the crowds away to go into the villages to buy some food for themselves. Okay, they're in a pretty remote location. They're out in the middle of nowhere. The sun is going down. Thousands of people have been all day, and Jesus is up there teaching. And the disciples are kind of, you know, trying to get Jesus' attention. And they're like, psst, Jesus, Jesus, can you wrap this up a little bit? People have been here all day, and sun's going down, and they haven't eaten, and they're hungry, and more importantly, we're hungry, and we saw a taqueria about a mile back, and, you know, they close in about 45 minutes, and so, you know, let's go. So that's kind of what's happening here, and Jesus is saying, the disciples say, hey, you know, these people need to go and eat. In verse 16, here's where the tension starts. But Jesus said to them, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. They don't need to go anywhere. You give them something to eat." I mean, remember, the sun's going down. Thousands of people have been there all day. Nobody packed a sack lunch. And the disciples say to Jesus, these people need to eat. Jesus didn't argue with the disciples. He didn't argue the need. He just said to the disciples, hey, you saw the need. Good job, guys. Now you feed them. You do something about it. And the disciples are like, you know, Jesus, have you seen how many people are out here? I mean, there are thousands of people here, Jesus. And the disciples thought, you know, what all of us have thought at some point in our lives when we kind of feel that little nudge, you know, once we kind of determine that, you know, that's God, that's not the taqueria we ate out last night, you know, that little voice that said, you know, go do something. The disciples are feeling that tension, that I don't know a lot about the Bible. That tension of, you know, I wouldn't know what to say. That tension of, you know, I haven't studied enough. That tension of, you know, who am I to, I mean, you know, if you knew my past, you wouldn't, I'd be the last person to say something. I mean, Jesus, I mean, that's great, but Jesus, you need another plan kind of tension, okay? Because if I'm your plan, then you need a plan B. You need a better plan. That's kind of what was going on here. Verse 17. And they said to him, "We only have 5 loaves here and 2 fish." So we've kind of, you know, gathered, you know, kind of searched our lunch. We didn't bring a lunch, and we, you know, a lot of people didn't bring lunch, but we found this kid who, you know, who has some fish, and he said we can have it and some loaves, and all we have is just a couple of pieces of fish and a couple of pieces of loaves. In other words, what they're saying, and you and I have said this to God when we kind of feel that nudging of getting out of our comfort zone, basically they say to Jesus, "We don't have what it takes." I mean, they're saying, "Jesus, we're not arguing the need. We just don't have what we need to accomplish what you're asking us to do." Anybody ever felt that way? That God, you felt like God is asking you to do something, and you just, I mean, you feel like you got crumbs and pieces here, and you're not enough, and you don't know enough, and, you know, and what if, and what if that, and what if this, and, you know, God, you got the wrong man, you got the wrong woman, you got the wrong teenager. That's kind of what the disciples are saying. They're saying, "Hey, we'd love to do something about that need, but we can't address that need. We don't have enough. We're not enough. This is all we have." And look what Jesus says to that. Look what he says to them, really what he says to us. Verse 18. He said, "Bring them here to me." He says, "You bring your excuses, you bring your pieces, you bring your crumbs, you bring your weaknesses, you bring your deficiencies, you bring your mistakes, you bring that to me." In other words, Jesus was saying, "You bring everything you have to me. And you, in other words, you do what you know to do, and you trust me to do the rest." Because here's the deal. These guys, Jesus wasn't holding them responsible for the end result. He was just inviting them into what he was planning on doing anyway. He was planning on feeding these people, and he invites the disciples. Now, what if you're one of the disciples? So Jesus says, "Bring them to me." And then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass, and so he kind of groups them together. To sit down on the grass, and taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, so taking everything the disciples brought him, Jesus, he looked up to heaven. Now, just kind of underline that. That's real important, because the number one reason why Jesus came to earth is to reveal who God the Father was. There was a lot of confusion about God. Some people thought he was an angry God or a judgmental God or a distant God or whatever. But the number one reason why Jesus came was to reveal to the earth, to reveal to people who God the Father was. And the number one thing, the number one characteristic that Jesus wanted to show people was that God was a perfect, loving, heavenly Father. And so Jesus wanted to take this moment, okay, to look up to heaven, to show people, "Hey, this isn't about my will. This isn't about me. The power doesn't come from me. This is all about God. Okay, all the power comes from God. This is Jesus saying, not my will be done. Not me, but you, God." And he's modeling that for us, okay? And so he looked up and he said a blessing. So I guess right there we have our example set that, you know, to say a blessing before the meal. That's not a bad idea. Encourage that. I think it's a horrible idea when you're sitting at a party of 30, okay? I mean, how do you do that? You know, how do you say a blessing where everybody can hear? You know, but, you know, Uncle John, he stands up, you know, he's going to say the blessing, and not just for these 30 people that you're sitting with, but for the whole restaurant. "Dear God, we want to thank you for the food." You know, I'm like, no, let's just get in our prayer circle. You know, let's get groups of 4 or 5 together and pray over the meal. You know, let's do it that way. But here Jesus sets an example for us, I guess. And he looked up and he said a blessing, and then he broke the loaves and he gave them to the disciples. Now let's stop for a minute. Imagine you're one of the disciples. All right. I mean, you're lined up. You're shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to shoulder. There's 12 of you. Behind you, there's 10 to 15,000 hungry people. And Jesus, you know, gives Peter a couple of pieces of fish and bread, and he gives John a couple of pieces of fish and bread. He gives Matthew a couple of pieces of fish and bread. He gives you a couple of pieces of fish and bread. And you're standing there. 15,000 hungry people behind you. You've got a couple of pieces of bread and fish. And Jesus does one of these numbers. Go on now. Go serve some food. What are you thinking if you're a disciple? You're thinking, there's no way. Jesus, you've lost your mind. This isn't going to feed three people, much less 15,000 people. But what do the disciples do? They're there with their basket of a couple of pieces of fish. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. Now, you got to think that, you know, they've got their basket and they take a big breath. And whew, all right, they turn around and they're like, here's a piece of fish for you. And here's a piece of fish for you. And here's fish for you. And here's fish for you. And I mean, the basket doesn't go empty. Here's some bread for you. Here's some bread for you. Here's some bread for you. And look what happens. It says, and they all, okay? So we're not talking 3 people, 10 people. We're not talking a 30 top. We're talking all 5,000 plus women and children. And they all ate and were satisfied. Meaning that they're like, hey, here's some fish for you. Here's some bread for you. Here's some fish. Here's some bread. Here's some fish. Here's some bread. Oh, you're not a fish eater? Okay, here's some bread. Here's some fish. Here's some bread. Oh, you want seconds? Yeah, you can have seconds. Oh, you want thirds? Yeah, you can have thirds. And look at the end. It says, and they all ate and were satisfied, and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces left over. So each disciple had their own basket full of leftovers. Now, I'm not a big leftover person, okay? Particularly when it comes to fish. But they had leftovers. One for each disciple. And those who ate were about 5,000 men beside the women and children. See, the disciples are standing there. And they do just what Jesus told them to do. They did what they knew to do, and that was hand out fish. That was hand out bread. That was hand out food. So here's the deal. Jesus had a very, very specific agenda. And you see, Jesus knew. Jesus knew he was handing this whole thing off, this whole operation off to these guys. And he knew if their faith, if their trust, if their confidence remained in their power and their performance to generate outcomes and not God's power and God's performance to generate outcomes, this whole thing would never get off the ground. See, Jesus knew if in their hearts they thought it was up to them, they would fail and fail miserably. And the reason why Jesus asked them to do this is because he knew they couldn't. And he wanted them to understand that and lean into his power and his performance. You see, this story, I mean, it's a great story, right? But it's not about feeding 5,000 people. Let's not grab onto that, because these people are going to get hungry again, okay? All right? But this was about their hearts, and it's about our hearts. You see, that burden that God has put on your heart, maybe it's for, you know, that coworker. Maybe it's for that classmate. Maybe it's for that teammate. Maybe it's for, you know, that team. Maybe it's for that neighbor, that family member, that group of people, or that people group, or that country, that nation. That burden that God has put on your heart, that's not just for them, but it's also for you. That those burdens that God has put on my heart, it's not just for them, it's also for me. And that God wants to grow our faith in him. And many times that happens when you and I step out of our comfort zone. And God knows we only have a couple of pieces of fish and a couple of loaves of bread. He knows we have deficiencies. He knows we have weaknesses. He knows we have faults. He knows all of that. He knows that we're the new person in the neighborhood. He knows that we're just a freshman in college. He knows we're just a seventh grader. He knows that we're new to the company. He knows that we're low man on the totem pole. He knows that we still have to sit at the kid table at family dinners. He knows all of that. That's why he calls us. That's why he invites us in to his plan, because he wants to do something in us and through us that would cause our faith to grow in him and make his name famous. You see, when we do something that's beyond us, when we step out of our comfort zone, our faith grows. Especially when we can't take credit for what happened. And who knows where that may lead you. I mean, listening to that voice of God, that urging, that calling of God in your life, I mean, it may lead you to do something once a year. Maybe it's buy bicycles for Mission Arlington. You know, I mean, that thing has grown over the years, and it just started out with a couple of families saying, we want to show our kids what Christmas is really about. And now those guys, they take up trailers and trucks full of bicycles to Mission Arlington. Maybe God's calling you to put that in your Christmas budget this year. Maybe it's a kind of a, we need to set aside, you know, some extra money to give to an organization. Maybe an organization that, you know, like, you know, Jennifer Sands and Chris Sands, they help sponsor and help lead. And, you know, Chris is over here leading worship. And but they have established an infant in distress program for babies in Burkina Faso in Africa. Maybe it's just giving to that monthly. Maybe God is calling you out of your comfort zone to do something weekly. Maybe it's you know, teach kids or invest in teenagers or hold a door open. Or maybe it's to invest in, you know, with teen moms, you know, like Embrace Grace. Or you know what, maybe it is just a random one and done thing. Maybe it's writing a camp scholarship. Maybe it's buying somebody's meal, a random meal. Maybe it's buying somebody Starbucks in the line behind you. Maybe it's listening to a coworker talk about their weekend and you know you just need to pray for them. But I mean, y'all never really talked about God before, and there's that voice, and what do you say? And you really don't like praying out loud, but here it goes, and you just say, can I pray for you? And that's what they've needed. That's what their soul has been crying for, is for somebody just to reach out to them. And that, in that moment, when we step out of our comfort zone and do something that's beyond us, our faith grows. And God gets all the glory. He gets all the fame. And you know what? God doesn't need us to do what God's going to do. But God is inviting you and I into his story, as he's drawing our coworkers and our family members and our neighbors and our classmates and our teammates to himself. He invites you and I to play a role. And you know what really freed up the disciples just to be able to hand out the fish and the bread? Is they knew they weren't responsible for the outcome. They just knew to do what they had been told to do. And when we have that understanding, it doesn't matter how good the prayer is. It doesn't matter whose coffee we bought. Doesn't matter which kid went to camp on our scholarship. We're not responsible for the outcome. That's God's job. We just do what we need to do and trust God to do what only He can do.